Greeting from the Srimad Bhagavatam, text 51, chapter 7. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tatraha marshito bhimas tasya shreyan vidasmita nabartu natmanas charte yohan suptam sisanvita. Bhima, however, disagreed with them and recommended killing this culprit who, in an angry mood, had murdered sleeping children for no purpose. And for neither his nor his master's interest. No purport. 52. Nishamya bhima gaditam tropadyascha chaturbhuja alokya vadanam sakyur idam aha hasaniva. Chaturbhuja, the forearm one, or the personality of Godhead, after hearing the words of Bhima, Draupadi, and others, saw the face of his dear friend. And he began to speak as if smiling. Purport. Lord Krishna had two arms, and why he is designated as forearms is explained by Sridhar Swami. Both Bhima and Draupadi held opposite views about killing Ashwatthama. Bhima wanted him to be immediately killed, whereas Draupadi wanted to save him. We can imagine Bhima ready to kill while Draupadi is obstructing him. And in order to prevent both of them, the Lord discovered another two arms. Originally, the primeval Lord Sri Krishna displays only two arms, but in his Narayan feature, he exhibits four. His Narayan feature resides with his devotees in the Vaikuntha planets, while in his original Sri Krishna feature, he resides in the Krishna Loka planet, far, far above the Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual sky. Therefore, if Sri Krishna is called Chaturbhuja, there is no contradiction. If need be, he can display hundreds of arms, as he exhibited in his Vishwarup, shown to Arjuna. Therefore, one who can display hundreds and thousands of arms can also manifest four whenever needed. When Arjuna was perplexed about what to do with Ashwatthama, Lord Krishna, as a very dear friend of Arjuna, voluntarily took up the matter just to make a solution. And he was smiling also. Omi jnana timurandasya jnananjana shalakaya saksur unmulitam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kaupa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasude Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. greetings from the Bhakti Center. I just arrived. Actually, they're having a retreat here. There's almost 125 people here. Bhagavad Swami is doing a retreat. It's also to support the Bhakti Center, raise funds, like that. And so let's get into the story. Anyway, we're following a common train of thought here. Let me shut the door in my room because then I just think there's going to be 1 second. You know, we've been following this story for a long while, and then somehow or other is, you know, usually in the Bhagavatam, each verse or purport, there's something a little different, but it's really just focusing on this one thing. And I've been trying to speak on it. But according to my realization, but the issue at hand is that the Pandavas, their guru's son, in this fratricidal war, somehow their guru, their military guru, is on the other side, military, spiritual, whatever. It's teacher is teacher. Teacher represents God in that kind of culture. Because knowledge is in the body of God, and someone who represents that in any way represents God, and you respect him as such. Acharyamam vijaniyam navamanyeta karhi chit. The Acharya, the Guru, is my very self, Krishna says, and you should not envy him in any way. He's your authority. And surrendering to that authority will give you a component of knowledge that, if used properly, whether it's military, medical, or philosophical, if used properly, will be a component of your self realization. I mean, Jivasya Tattva, the goal is to realize Krishna, but there is a whole conditioned world that we're forced to live in, and how to deal with our desires properly is also important knowledge. So anyone who represents that is so revered. So, but he somehow or other, his son in the war killed all their children, and there's a conflict now what to do. And it basically became resolved when Draupadi, the mother of the children, spoke up. It just shows you character, you know. We even see it in the modern days, you know, where you know, the Amish, where someone kills their, went into their church and killed their children. And the Amish forgave and were willing to take in the wife of the person who killed their children, now would go to jail for the rest of his life. So there's certain impressions of character and nobility, moral qualities that in people of character run so strongly. And even though she was the mother, she felt compassion for the mother of the person whom killed her children, who and wanted to spare his life, therefore, for the didn't want to cause pain to the mother, and also that he saw these impressions of respect for authority, for guru, for teachers, for parents, you know, that also runs very strong. And so the dilemma was there, and Draupadi, in her impassioned plea, based on compassion and integrity and so many qualities, pleaded, "No, spare him. He's the son of our teacher." But people have different personalities. Even on the highest level, there are different viewpoints, actually. There's truth that can be seen in different ways, even in the highest platform. Krishna is seen as a son by his mother and a lover by the gopis, and as the imminent supreme, you know, Lord by the tapasvi yogis. So the same truth can be seen in different perspectives. And even in this, there are reasons to kill him and there's reasons to save him. And on one level, they're both right. But now they're in conflict. So how to resolve that conflict? That's when it takes Solomon. That's when it takes wisdom. That's when it takes realization. That's why we need teachers. That's why we need mentors. We need people who know the Shastra, have applied the Shastra, sacred texts, and have realized those sacred texts. Because then your understanding of truth and the application in society will be superficial. There's so many truths. I mean, book distribution is a truth, but it can be carried to the extent that there's, you know, chant in here, which is the message of the books. Those people who really are deep, really realize in Prabhupada's instructions, and they do both. And detachment's a truth. Considering we're not the body, and it's a truth. But anyway, I've gone over these points so many times, so I don't want to belabor them. But this is the dilemma, and the resolution of the dilemma will take some realization to take that truth and apply it in a situation different from where you saw that principle applied in the Shastra. We have so many principles of truth, and they're described, even in a contemporary way we can see, they're described in a culture 5,000 years ago. Now take that truth into the modern context and how to apply it. It'll take a little depth of understanding because the form of it may have to be changed a little bit, but you can't change the essence of it. There are principles and there are details. Principles are certain truths for everyone, and details are how they're applied. So that point itself is a significant point that this chapter is understanding. This truth itself is so important. Realization, wisdom, yan, vigyan. You must have understanding of what is true, but you must have realization of it. You must have a depth by applying it. And when you apply it, you have such a depth of that truth that you can recognize the truth in different shapes and forms. or you can communicate it or apply it to different circumstances. It's so beautiful to see someone with wisdom and with realization, because they transcend superficial political viewpoints. Conservatives don't change the form of anything. You know, liberals change it to the extent that you lose the connection and power of the tradition. And we see that. We see a spiritual person can't fall within that type of category, because truth is not limited to particular forms. And it's not found in certain forms either. So here, and then I like the point, Krishna has four arms, because he's got to hold them back. And of course, the point is, well, once you accept God, God can do anything. So, and then, for Hudson, Eva, it's even the Bhagavad Gita, it says, when Krishna became the guru, but when Arjuna surrendered, she says, Teham Sari Mam Twam Kapanam, Ipapanam, he surrendered fully. When he surrendered fully, then Krishna was like smiling, because there was sandhya. It's like the sunset is neither the day or the night. So he was in a transformation of relationship. And he was going from friend to guru, and friend is joking and smiling, and guru may not be. And so he was like smiling, indicated, and here the same thing, he's like smiling. It's a very serious situation, but it's a human reaction here too. He's like smiling. He's seeing that, his friend's confusion, and now they're looking to him. Just as Arjuna was looking before, he's looking to him again. Um, 53 and 54. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Ramabandur Nahantavya Atataya Bhavardana Mayevo Mayam Amnatam Paripanav Sushasanam Kuru Pratishutam Satyam Yatatsan Vayatapriyam Priyam Chapi Mashenasya Panchalya Mayami Vicha. Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna said, a friend of a Brahmin is not to be killed, but if he's an aggressor, he may be killed. So, friend of a Brahmin means he's not literally a friend, but he's not really a Brahmin. So when a Brahmin ceases to act in an exemplary way, then he's called Brahma Bandhu. He's no longer really a Brahmin. He just somehow associated with that. So he's but it's both. If someone does something heinous, if he's he loses his brahminical status, and he becomes an aggressor, he's to be killed, but at the same time, he's not to be killed. All these rulings are in the scriptures, and you should act accordingly. You have to fulfill the promise to your wife, and you must also satisfy the satisfaction of Bhimasena and me. So Arjuna, you have to do both. Arjuna was perplexed because Ashvatthama was to be killed as well as spared according to different scriptures cited by different persons. As a Brahma Bandhu, or a worthless son of a Brahmin, Ashvatthama was not to be killed. but he was at the same time an aggressor also. And according to the rulings of Manu, that's Dharma Shastra, an aggressor, even though he is to be a Brahmin, and what to speak of an unworthy son of a Brahmin, is to be killed. Dronacharya was certainly a Brahmin in the true sense of the term, but because he stood in the battlefield, he was killed. But although Ashwatthama was an aggressor, he stood without any weapons. The ruling, so there's another thing, Dronacharya was killed, but he was fighting. But the Dharma Shastra says you can't kill a person standing without any weapons. So Ashwatthama was captured. It wasn't like he was fighting them anymore. The ruling is that an aggressor, when he is without weapon or chariot, cannot be killed. All these were certainly perplexities. Besides that, Arjuna had to keep the promise he made before Draupadi just to pacify her. Arjuna gave his word, I'll bring his blood on your head. And he also had to satisfy both Bhima and Krishna, who advised killing him. This dilemma was present before Arjuna, and the solution was awarded by Krishna. So this is life's perplexities. But there is a right thing to do for every circumstance. It just takes some depth of understanding. And generally, this is actually when we go to our gurus, when we go to our mentors, when we're not sure what to do. Both sides, you know, six of one, half a dozen of another, both sides seem to have valid options. So we go. Of course, sometimes it's just because we just don't know the Shastra, and the guru will tell us. And another time, because there are different principles supporting either of the options that we take. So we have to understand, yeah, so this is life. How important it is to know people of wisdom, to have for a child to be, have parents who are mature and have gone through life and have gurus and have some understanding and beyond whatever limits they may have, to have mentors that have some understanding, even beyond that, to have realized people. And I remember when there was a conflict about the role of women, we had a big meeting in Devanagari, and there were, you know, the conservative side that there must be the, you know, we can't risk the woman at home. And then there was the more liberal side and, you know, that women have to be empowered. And you can see, really, if you want to step back, there's truth on both sides. The culture of the nurturing influence at home is so important to the development of society, because the mother's affection and love creates the strength of mind, and generally that's done through the kitchen. So a working lady that hires only, I know one Indian boy came, and he was absolutely mad because his father came and he was competing with his brothers, and he worked so many jobs, and his mother was working. He never had a home cooked meal. They were already ordering out pizza. I'm not saying that was the cause of his mental problems, or maybe a symptom, but exacerbate whatever the case. But you can understand how important the domestic loving, nurturing influences in the home. And at the same time, there's qualified ladies that have natures, or they get older, or within their particular role, or that's their nature and things, and they need to be empowered, etc. So there's truth on either side. So there was this argument going on, and you had the conservatives and the liberals, and it was very, very heated. And then Jayadvaita Maharaj offered his point, and he said, because this is 20 years ago, so what, the oldest person there is 45 maybe, but maybe 25 or 40. Or so, well, you know, the Prabhupada's, what Jai Advaitamar said, the problem of ISKCON is there's no grandmothers. And it was such a salient point that, you know, you just need people of wisdom that can transcend, you know, that have lived life and that can transcend, you know, pettiness coming from conditioning. And, of course, nothing is easy to resolve. I know Rabindra Sarup made the interesting point that the problem with ISKCON was, is that there were no, that Prabhupada was the only adult. So anyway, the point has been made, but there needs to be, a guru should be resourced. Borjan said that before. He's a resource. You come to him as a resource of knowledge. And what is the Shastra? The Shastra is a compendium of archetypal examples, historical or stories, of certain principles. Certain principles for the resolution of confusion. You look at any story, there's a moral to be applied. There's a situation. There's a situation. This is the solution to that situation. This is the principle that's applied. So when someone actually deeply knows the Shastra, they know all these examples, and then someone comes to them, and what should I do? He has a reference point from the Shastra. But as the circumstances in which the principle applied are not exactly parallel, the person who has read that teaching should have applied it to realize the depth of that principle. And therefore, that's Bhishma Dev's instructions to Yudhisthira about why to, you know, good things happen, bad things happen to good people. And he explained, in any situation, no matter how difficult to try, no matter how trying the circumstances are, there's no cause for despondency if you know three things. That there's God in every circumstance who's good, and you should bow down and worship him. That you should follow Dharma. And you should take the guidance of the Vaishnavas and Brahmins. And why should you take the guidance of the Vaishnavas and Brahmins? Because they have depth of understanding of those principles. They understand what they are. They've applied them into their lives. And therefore, they can see the principle that's applicable to your particular situation. And we all yearn for that. I yearn for that. And I can't figure out everything myself. It's a lot of times more difficult to figure out your own life than others, because our own attachments sometimes skew the view and solution. So you need someone to look at the situation that doesn't have personal attachments to it. So, and it's so nice here, just the, you know, Shastra, you know, it's not even, you know, war is inevitable. You know, people have conflicts and you need people to protect people. And you know, even we see, you know, and the material conception to see the world through our own desires and therefore see, you know, this territory is ours because I want it, and the other person sees it. And it's just natural conflict, but it's so nice that the whole society, demons and devotees, were on Shastra, so there were principles of it. There was no beheading people and torturing people and bombing villages and, you know, all, you know, poison gas and, you know, all these horrible things. Even war had a certain dignity in a proper culture. It was more like a sporting event, but like with the stakes were higher. But, you know, people would really leave it on the field. You know. Just then Arjuna could understand the motive of the Lord by his equivocal orders. And thus with his sword he severed both hair and jewels. And jewel from the head of Ashwatthama. Purport. Contradictory orders of different persons are impossible to carry out. Therefore, a compromise was selected by Arjuna by his sharp intelligence. And he separated the jewel from the head of Ashwatthama. This was as good as cutting off his head. And yet his life was saved for all practical purposes. Here Ashwatthama is indicated as twice born. Certainly he was twice born, but he fell down from his position, and therefore he was properly punished. Text 1756. The Mucharasana Badham Balahatya Hataprabhum Prabham Sejasamanina Hinam Sibaran Niriyapayat Hiyashvatama had already lost his bodily luster due to infanticide. And now, moreover, having lost the jewel from his head, he lost even more strength. Thus he was unbound and driven out of the camp. Purport. Thus being insulted, the humiliated Ashwatthama was simultaneously killed and not killed by the intelligence of Lord Krishna and Arjuna. So killed and not killed. So it's funny, he lost his luster. You lose your luster when you do evil things. It's just somehow or other. You know, love, somehow or other, love is like a light. And it really illuminates the body. And love is happiness. Happiness is love. So when one is happy, it's because his life's full of love. And that happiness, just like when you're someone is happy and smiling, there seems to be a light coming from their body. Just like I tell that story of meeting the Bridge Basi, who lost so much in the farms and so many things. His gardens were lost. He's telling me all his problems, but he was sparkling. And I said, how? He said, happiness is a heart full of devotion. So when you have that heart full of devotion, it's visible. And when you have that heart full of hate, it's just like a snake, you know, with that envy, ready to strike. It can be perceived. The heart is on the sleeve. The face is the index of the mind. That's so true. So when you're so heinous that you kill children, it affects you. It affects you. I know one person in India that, anyway, it's a strange story, but he was some kind of warrior class. And he... he was against what he thought was the mafia. I'll leave that to people's judgment. And he thought that they were exploiting the temple. And he killed them. That was serious stuff going on, but he killed them. And then you know, so one of my friends, you know, commented after seeing him after, I don't know how Indian jails or justice works, but you know, you lose your luster. Cutting the hair from his head, depriving him of his wealth, and driving him from his residence are the prescribed punishments for the relative of a Brahmin. There is no injunction for killing the body. They just so much want to honor the teacher that it, that honor extends to his family. And even though he was so heinous, still the injunction was against killing him. Thereafter, the sons of Pandu and Draupadi, overwhelmed with grief, performed the proper rituals for the dead bodies of their relatives. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Son of Drona Punished. So next week we will start prayers by Queen Kunti, and that should be very interesting, different verses for philosophical conclusions. Does anyone have any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Hare Krishna, Gail.
Well, first of all, I want to say that you remember when you were describing conservatives, liberals, people who have depth of understanding?
Yeah.
I was thinking the whole time, this is why I love listening to you, because you were like describing yourself in my mind so much. It was like... Anyway, and I'm also saying that because I want to get three questions.
Okay, you bribed me. Thank you again. Whatever you want, please.
Okay, my first question is about Krishna's like smiling, you know, like he did in the Gita. Now, I'm somehow much more understanding of that one, and I get that one more than in this case where he did that, like you said, in such a serious situation. You know, I understand that he liked the fact that Arjuna came to him, but still, to even be like smiling in that situation is like, I don't know.
Well, let's go to the situation. You know, it wasn't about his. It was this whole thing going on. This argument back and forth. I think sometimes what happens is, in terms of emotions and situations, they become situations within situations. You know. So even in the greatest tragedy, you know, and they're dealing with him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, they got into a whole other type of situation that was focused on this dilemma between two people, you know, to kill him or not kill him. And then I guess Arjuna was just bewildered, you know, and he kind of, you know, had to turn it to Krishna. So, I guess there's some scope for that, but he held it back because of the seriousness of the situation. Let's put it this way. It was something that was humorous, but because of the situation, he held it back. So it was prahasa, it was hasan even. It was like smiling.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't okay. Smiles like that. That's what I would say. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And also... You know, related to this, you know, you said that Arjuna was able to understand how to resolve that dilemma, you know, in the face of Krishna's equivocal, you know, instructions. So, was it just because he was so smart, or how come he was able?
I see that it doesn't say. You know, sometimes, you know, So your question is, Arjuna could understand the motive of the Lord and then sever the head, although Krishna didn't say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Krishna insisted, no, you have to do both. So somehow he cooled down, and he looked for a solution in that way. Before that, it was one or the other. And Krishna says, no, it's not one or the other. You have to do both. So Arjuna just reflected and understood what Krishna's desire was, and he said, with the solution. So because he was taking a side, and Draupadi was taking a side, and Bhima was taking a side, but Krishna said, no, you have to satisfy both. So he came with the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think just by Krishna saying that you have to satisfy both, that presented, or that gave Arjuna the realization that there was a way, whereas before he didn't, like you said, he could only see one or the other.
Yeah, I think that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay, last thing. last thing is this jewel on Ashwatthama's head. What is that about? Is this something that was just pinned to his hair? What is this jewel on his head?
I don't really have a vision of it because I don't see it every day. But I guess there's a way to keep some jewel in the hair. I mean, when you have long hair, and I don't know how it's done.
But it's some kind of like, this jewel, is it a material thing? Is it a spiritual thing? It gives empowerment? What is it? I mean, this jewel, just by taking it out of your head.
Jewels have power. So that, Krishna has a kastuba mani, there's jewels that have power. This is a whole other level of mysticism, etc. There's connections with subtle demigods or whatever, and protection, and they're on a whole other level of reality. They have the Ashwatthama and the subtle things, and so I think it's just, it does have some power.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot the story, but he was given it for some reason with a benediction, and who knows what, either a powerful person can invest power in something and give it to you, or by mantras you can invest power in things. So somehow there's some different tantric sciences that we're not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Maharaj, thank you so much.
Thank you, Gail. Anybody else have any questions?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
None to do, Maharaj.
I have one question, Maharaj, if you have time.
I have time.
Okay, for Mother Gail, she asked, actually that jewel was given by his father, Lord Shurya.
So tell the story of the jewel.
The jewel, because Kunti, when she got her first son, she was unmarried. The story. So, but it is because of the benediction.
Story. Tell the story.
Yeah, Lord Surya, because of him, because she got the benediction from the Vrishamuni, that, whenever you chant this mantra, you can, get, demigods, powerful demigods, and they will appear in front of you. And that's what, because the Vrishamuni was very pleased when he was visiting Kunti Bho's country. And she served so nice that Durvashamani was very pleased. He told him, I'm giving you this mantra. If you want to invoke any demigods, you can get. So I think Mother Kunti was just trying, whether it is really true or not. She chanted this mantra and invoked Surya. The Surya came and he told, that, now that you called, I cannot, because it should not be failed. So I am giving you a son. And then I'm giving benediction of that son will. I'm just putting in a different way. That was completely different. But Ashwatthama was, you know, benedicted by his father because he gave, you know, also Brahmastra. So he did, you know, had tapasya, and he was born with this, this special, powerful, that he was born in the skin. It's like, you know, one horn a horse. So something, you know, he was born with. And it was predicted that, you know, once he loses this, you know, he will lose all his strength. That's yeah, but that's beside another point. My question is, Maharaj, you answered one of the questions that I had last week, and you answered this week that, you know, Brijan Prabhu asked Prabhupada about the principle and details, and you know, and I think Prabhupada mentioned that it is the intelligence, you know, required to have you know, to get a whole through the things. And today you mentioned that Arjuna got the intelligence to solve all the problems, what Krishna wants, what, you know, Draupadi wants, what the Bhima wants, by his intelligence.
Nice for you.
So you answered. I was thinking that what, you know, the intelligence will tell when the principle and details are there.
Yeah, intelligence. Thank you, Nanda Dulal.
Thank you.
Anybody else like to say hello now?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Shai, Hare Bo. Great
Happy
to hear
Radha.
Both of you. Wonderful. Wonderful. So nice to discuss Bhagavatam in the Sangha. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna, this is Vaishnavi.
Vaishnavi, great. Wonderful. That's nice. Good. Okay. I guess this is your marathon week. So, good. Okay. Hare Krishna. Thank you, Vaishnavi. Anyone else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Who's this?
It's Rachel.
Rachel, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Okay. Which Rachel is this?
I'm Rachel. I'm calling from the nation of Texas.
From the nation of Texas?
Yes.
Okay, where did I meet you, Rachel?
At the Bhakti Center.
Oh, okay. Were you from New Orleans, or it's Texas?
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm right now in Austin.
Well, thanks, Rachel, for calling. That's great to hear from you. Okay, wonderful.
Thank you for the classes. Really nice. I really just want to say that it's really beautiful to see Arjuna's the way Arjuna's thinking about things and how the mind is processing all the information and the soul is processing this information, but we don't hear that in-depth discussion about the other participants in the story. But it's really amazing,
yeah.
Like when we take this story and we put it to our own lives, that all this stuff is going on in other people's, you know, souls, you know, at the same time that we're coming up. And so this idea that we get the information from a higher source is, for me, it's really, really beautiful to be told and taught and reminded that we have that option. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Rachel, did I meet you in the Bhakti Center once?
No, many times.
Many times. What's your full name?
Rachel Lavallee.
Oh, okay. Oh,
we
no, I know who you are now. You just said the first name, of course.
No,
of
but
course.
Don't worry. I understand you meet like so many people. Don't worry.
No. I of course I know who you are. Well, anyway, Rachel, thank you so much for coming on. And
thank you.
I love that you're listening. I know that you like to hear these things. And thank you for your comment. Thank you, Rachel. And
yes,
thanks for sending
thank
your
you.
Writings, too. Great.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Then we'll end for now. Thank you. Once you close the TV show, it's the day of the trip.